Hello, and welcome to Teaching My Cat to Read, the very serious book review podcast. I'm Eli.
I'm Em.
And I'm Lottie. And this week we're discussing everything about Temeraire by Naomi Novik.
Okay, who wants to do the terrible summary?
My terrible summary is, yeah, I've had this dragon for a day and a half, and if anything happened to him, I would kill myself and everyone on this boat, and then myself.
You know, the second book is basically that, but like Temeraire for Lawrence.
Oh,
I've had this naval captain for like a year and a half, and if anything happened to him...
I will burn the entire world. Yeah. The one thing I wanted to say before we actually really get into this episode is, read this book. Everyone should read this book. Mm-hmm. You're only allowed to listen to this podcast episode if you have read this book, because you should read it, and you should read it without being spoiled. So you're not allowed to listen to this episode until you've read it, because we're going to spoil it.
Yeah.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
We cannot uphold this law, but...
Yeah, we can't force you, but you should. You should read it. Yeah. This is a book that Em has been recommending to me for ages.
Also, every single person that I know. People, if we were still getting buses, I would be recommending it to random strangers on the bus. We've reached that level. I love it so much.
And it's another one that, yes, has been recommended for, and I've read for this podcast and absolutely loved this. I devoured this book. I read it in about 4 hours. It's so good.
Such a good book. I think I've read this before, but when I was probably like 11, I remember having the book somewhere in my house, but I couldn't find it. So I guess reading it for the first time afresh, I kind of thought it was basically the Napoleonic Wars, but with dragons, and the dragons are big cats. That was kind of the vibe I got from this book.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah, that's
I think that sums it up quite nicely. Yeah. I was trying to rack my brain and think about like why I read it, because I knew people had recommended me Spinning Silver near constantly for about a year before I read it.
Which is another book by Naomi Novik.
And I kind of assumed it was to do with that. And I think what actually happened was somebody on Tumblr recommended A. Marguerite's Monstrous Regiment, which is what if Pride and Prejudice happened in this world where there are also dragons and Lizzie Bennet is a dragon captain. And that blew my entire mind. And I was like, well, I guess I have to read the original now. So that I got into it by reading a fanfic first, which isn't... I'd like to say that doesn't happen very often, but I have been seduced into many fandoms by reading fics that I have no context for and then being like, damn, all right. I guess I live here now.
Now I have to do the reading. Now I have to understand the lore for this fanfiction.
I guess like the setup for this book is that it's obviously set during the Napoleonic Wars, and there's the captain of this British vessel, the HMS Reliant, William Lawrence, who is a babe. We love him. And basically that there is this big ship battle, and on the ship that they capture, there's a dragon's egg. And so I guess part one of this book is going through what they do with the egg, and then part two is the egg hatches, and then part three is big dragon does cool stuff. In a nutshell,
it's a very good introduction to the world, because like Will Lawrence, as we meet him, doesn't know very much about dragons. Like the aerial corps in Britain is like really secretive, and so like laymen don't really know anything about dragons apart from like maybe if they've seen them in battle once or twice. So like we get to, it's a very like naturalistic way of introducing us to like all the ways this world is different because there are dragons. And also like just establishing all the lore and like what dragons could do and how people think about them, and
like you have to harness them right after they're hatched, otherwise they'll be feral and you won't be able to use them as weapons of war, essentially. And that's like the first conflict in the book is somebody has to harness this dragon, and then they're bound to the dragon and they have to go and become an aviator.
And none of them want to, because it's like this massive like
feud. The Navy don't like the Air Corps.
Yeah, they're like, the aviators are like not respectable.
No.
If you ride a dragon, then you're like, you can't be admitted to polite society ever again, kind of thing. It's this massive taboo almost.
And it's kind of, there's a few mentions of saying the aviators had a scruffy uniform, they weren't very well kept, they were very, like, you know, windblown, obviously being on a dragon, but...
They don't stand on ceremony either, or, like, rank.
Yeah,
they don't do manners, really.
And it's a very big difference to what Lawrence is used to in the Navy, where there is a very strict command structure. It's all very organized in the sense of your clothing and like in a hierarchy. And his boat gets this egg. The egg hatches and they call the dragon Temeraire.
Yeah.
And
well, so he and his crew like draw lots to see who has to be the one to make the sacrifice of trying to harness this dragon, right?
Yeah.
And the person who drew the lot, which is not Lawrence, basically fails to do it. Mm-hmm. And then the dragon comes up to Lawrence and starts talking to him. And it's like, oh,
yeah,
I guess this dragon has adopted me.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to talk about that moment because I think it's a really... So I was rereading this. This was maybe my fourth time around because this is how much I love this book. And I was kind of reading it with an eye to like character things because I've got a fic in my head that I want to write that is like very long Will Lawrence character study, basically. And I was thinking about how it's such a good introduction to his character. But like the key moment when he harnesses the dragon, I want to talk about because like... I think that kind of establishes everything you need to know about him.
Yeah.
It's like, for the whole, like, since they've had the egg, he's been doing this whole, like, oh, I don't want to be an aviator, but I can't ask my men to do it if I'm not willing to take the risk. And that's why, like, they end up drawing lots, right? And he's still racked with guilt over it, because the kid that pulls the short straw is, like, terrified of heights and really young and has, like, his whole life ahead of him, all of this. And so the dragon comes up to Lawrence and, like, after refusing to be harnessed by this poor kid... And is like, hey, what's with the long face, man? Why the long face? Only cuter than that, obviously.
He asks, why are you frowning? I think.
Yes. And Lawrence sees the kid coming up with the harness again, like desperately trying to master himself to like try again and ruin his whole life, basically, because it's his duty. And Lawrence just takes this deep breath and goes, I beg your pardon, I did not mean to. And suddenly he's the dragon captain. And but it's like, it's very clear in that moment that he's choosing that to save somebody else from it.
Yeah. Yes.
And I think that tells you everything you need to know about him going forward, basically.
And they can't just let the dragon go feral. Somebody has to harness it because it's so valuable to have a dragon that they need it to become an actual dragon they can use to fight and not just to breed more dragons.
And one of the things is, because the backstory of this is like most of the officers in the Navy at the time came from... I guess landed gentry, aristocracy, like the sons of like some lord somewhere. Therefore, being kicked out of society is bad for like your social standing, but it's also conflicts with your family, which I think Em, you wanted to
talk about. We've got to talk about that.
Can we talk about Lawrence's parents?
His dad sucks. His dad sucks so much.
I know. Like the setup is basically Temeraire decides to take Lawrence, and they go back to England. And Lawrence is like, oh, on the way to Scotland, where they're going to train for the Air Corps, he wants to meet
his
parents.
Is it where their magic school is? It's where their fake dragon Hogwarts is.
But it's better because it's got dragons. And yeah, he goes to his parents and his parents are dicks.
Hogwarts has dragons. Haven't you read book three?
But not like, you're not training a dragon. But so he goes home and... I don't know what you guys thought, but I did make a note that actually a bit of it is some of the language is lifted out of Pride and Prejudice.
I mean, it's the same time period. That's what they're aiming for,
And his discussion with his childhood sweetheart is like, oh, will you take me? Will you marry me? And she's like, nope, you're an air corps now. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
And his dad rant away.
His dad sucks. His dad disowns him for having... done this duty to his country and given up a career and a potential marriage that he really
wanted. He disowns him in everything but actually saying he's like, I'm not disowning you, don't be ridiculous, I just never want to speak to you or see you again, and you can't rely on us for money or
don't go around telling people that I've disowned you, that would give me a bad name, but I have disowned you, but you can't say that.
And you kind of get the impression that their relationship was already pretty terrible because Lawrence ran off to join the Navy against his dad's best wishes, basically.
His dad wanted him to join the church, I think. Or, it was considered about as bad if he had joined the church or something.
Yeah.
It reminded me of, in Black Sails, there is homophobia in the early 1700s is a driving force in the plot of that show. And that's pretty much all I will say for fear of spoilers, because I love Black Sails and I don't want to spoil it. But there is a plot line where somebody is basically... disowned and completely berated and abused by his father in a very similar scene. And it's just sort of, I don't know about the comparison, but here is somebody doing something that actually Lawrence has done a really good thing, and you know, in and he's just getting completely raked over hot coals from it by people who have absolutely no concept of who he is and what motivates him. And
it's interesting, like, on a reread, it really struck me. Like, I don't think I noticed the first time, because, like, okay, so the first time I read this, I read it really fast because I was enjoying it and I didn't pick up on all the nuance. But, like, it really struck me how, like, genuinely upset Lawrence is by it.
Mm.
Like, he's, like, he's not quite disassociating, but he is proper, like, he's completely out of it. And you can tell, like, his dad doesn't say very much, but it's enough to have this absolutely devastating effect on this guy that we've already kind of established as being sort of a rock in difficult situations. You know, you can rely on Lawrence, and, you know, he's steady, you know? And in this scene, he's just, like, completely taken apart with, like, two sentences. And he just walks, he basically walks straight out of the house and just straight into Temeraya's chest and is just like, poof, I live here now. And Lawrence is like, yeah, okay, I'm just being hugged by my dragon to sleep now.
Yep.
This is my emotional support dragon, and you can't take him from me.
Mm-hmm. And what I did like is, like, his mum met the dragon, though.
Oh, his mum's lovely.
So his mum is so sweet, and she goes over to meet the dragon, and Temeraire is just very gentle and just like, yes, I'm a dragon. Hello, nice to meet you.
Yeah,
Temeraire says to her, Lawrence introduces her and says, oh, this is so-and-so, she's my mother. And Temeraire goes, oh, a mother, that's special, isn't it? Because, like, he's a dragon, he hatched from an egg, he doesn't know these things. And he's just so polite, and immediately he's like, this woman is clearly very important to Lawrence, therefore I'm going to be lovely to her. And one of the things that this book does so, so well is just immediately establishing the relationship between Lawrence and Temeraire and giving it heart and making you believe in it without doing a lot of words to make it that way.
There are, like, two or three moments, I think, that people like to quote that are like, and, you know, the plot will be rollicking along. And it's like, you know, it's quite a plot heavy book. You know, it is very, like, it's an action adventure kind of situation. Mm. You do get, like, you run along through it, you know? And there are two or three moments where it just stops you dead to be like, would you like to be completely destroyed by a moment of peak tenderness between a man and a dragon? And you're like, yes, actually, thank you, I would. I'll just sit here and sob for the rest of the chapter. Thank you and good night.
That is exactly what I ordered on this Sunday afternoon.
Like, from day one, when he got the dragon, he read bedtime stories to this dragon and just told him stories. And also when Temeraire is just asking dumb things like, I want to go look at that flower. I want to go look at the sky. Lawrence is a very, he's like the supportive parent of a dragon.
I found a shiny rock. Look, it's a cool shiny rock.
I know. It's just,
he's so kind to him.
It's so kind. And I think at the start of the book, you definitely get this impression. You're thinking, oh, everyone's got to be nice to their dragon. I'm sort of segueing into the main.
Oh, we're going to
talk about Rankin.
The main evil guy. Because you're kind of thinking, everyone's got to be nice to dragon because this is such a cool situation. Like, we love a dragon.
And, like, if you or I had a dragon, we would be like, we'd be like with the cat, but more, right? We would just be like, this is my soulmate. I love and treasure them.
Yeah.
I am ride or die instantly.
Absolutely.
And then we meet characters who are not like that.
Like, what's his face, Rankin, who I was texting, I was messaging Em as I was reading this, obviously, because I'm just, like, reading this, having a lot of feelings, and, like, I need to share these with somebody who understands. And I remember messaging Em and being like, I don't like this Rankin dude. He's giving me the bad vibes. Catherine Harcourt hates him, who is a character we'll also talk about, and she's amazing. And therefore, I think I have been given no solid evidence to believe this yet, but also I hate his guts. And then it turns out he basically neglects his dragon. And, like, the bond between a dragon and its captain is like, I'm trying to think of, it's almost like they're your demon from the Dark Materials.
Yeah.
Like, you have to treat them well.
What it reminds me of is kind of, mostly from fandom things, is things like soulmates, like soul bonds. It's that kind of, like, the sense
almost
that you're kind of, you don't necessarily get a huge amount of choice in it and you're stuck with them. But for most people regard that as a really good thing. Like, and you get, like, a lot of the time, I mean, or not always, sometimes fanfic is doing soulmate things as, like, this is just fun and we're going to have a fun, sexy time. But a lot of the time, what it ends up talking about is things like free will and what it means to love somebody and to choose to love somebody and how that doesn't always work. And I think that's one of the really interesting things is that, we get quite a few foils to Lawrence and Temeraire's relationship throughout this book, and there's different way, like, most dragon captains are like completely devoted to their dragons. But what that means and what that looks like...
But you see it express itself in different ways.
Yeah. And not all of them are.
The first other dragon that we meet is this, like...
Volley!
Yeah, if we're going to compare dragons to cats, which I think we are going to do repeatedly throughout this book, the discussion of this book. Like, you know a cat that you see and their eyes are just vacant and you know there is nothing going on in that
It's
head.
Just elevator music.
Exactly. Sweet, sweet that is the first music. Dragon that we meet whose name is... Volatilis?
Volley.
Yeah, Volley. And because they all mostly have like sort of Latin sounding names.
Yeah.
Mm. And you see that like the person who's the captain of this dragon is like refers to him as like a bottomless pit, and, like with affection in the same way that we talk to our cat, right? We call her a menace. And and it's sort of established that this is the sort of the spectrum is either, you know, you treat your dragon like this, or you treat your dragon like Lawrence and Temuera. Temuera is really intelligent and they have a real relationship.
Yeah.
But already by the time that we meet this Rankin character, it's established that you do not, you to treat your dragon badly is a sin of the highest order, right?
And at the start, that's what he's doing. I think that was quite imperative. Like, so he goes to Loch Laggan and he meets Rankin at the start because nobody's talking to Rankin. And then he,
goes, oh, an outsider. I will befriend this outsider. And then he realizes he's an outsider for a good reason.
Nobody likes him because he treats his dragon so badly that Lawrence ends up a la Rosa in Brooklyn Nine-Nine with all the puppies. Just saying, somebody go and look up. I will pay you to go and look after this little dragon. He just needs company and some like positive reassurance.
Well, the dramatic irony as well of Lawrence seeing this dragon, Levitas, and going, why is nobody looking after this dragon? What's this captain doing? And like adopting this dragon basically and making sure he gets washed and making sure he gets food and company and enrichment. And at the same time, building a friendship with Rankin, whose dragon he never sees. And you can see it coming closer and closer. Levitas is Rankin's dragon. And Lawrence's horror when he realizes that he is being cultivating a friendship with this person who is despised for good reason.
And can we talk about his reaction? Because I think it's really interesting. And possibly, like, I don't know that it's necessarily a model of how you should deal with something like that, but I found it very interesting that he doesn't try and explain himself to anybody.
No.
He doesn't say, oh, I didn't know.
Because he realises he could have.
Yeah. He's like, he realises I could have picked up on this. The evidence was here.
Mm.
And then he's like, okay, so all I can do is amend my behaviour immediately and hope that people notice. But I can't, like, none of it, he's saying I hope that people notice in the sense of, like, he wants it to be clear that he didn't mean it and that, you know, that he wants to, like, get on well with these people that he's come to respect. But at the same time, he's not going to beg for forgiveness or he's not going to make a big thing of it. He's just going to be like, okay, the only way I can fix this is to change my behavior immediately.
Yeah.
And hope that that's enough.
And it was like one of those moments where prior to this, because in the Navy, he came across to me at least like being very prim and proper, obeying the rules, not being rude, like obeying your seniors, you know, trying not to cause an upset. And I've highlighted it, and it was any basis past the point of caring if it seemed rude. Lawrence interrupted with praise and patted Levitas. And it was just, he just goes to the point, F this, I'm going to go and pet this because I can't deal with it anymore. And
screw the rules, I'm doing what's right, you know?
Yeah, it's really interesting to me that the main moments where we see Lawrence either lose his temper or be what he thinks is unconscionably rude is when he perceives injustice to be done. So the first time I think he loses his temper is that, and I want to talk about this in like a different context later, but the moment where they've captured the French ship. He's taken the French captain's sword because apparently that is one of the intricate rituals that you do when you're Navy people who fight each other and one of them surrendered. And he makes a point of not giving the guy his sword back because he's looked around the ship and he's been like, okay, these people are really, half of these people are ill. There are not nearly enough sailors on this ship to be sailing this ship.
Mm.
They've been wrecked up by that storm that we just passed through. He should have just surrendered immediately. He should not have commanded his men to fight. He's not a young captain. This is an unforgivable error. And for that, I'm not going to give him his sword back like I normally would.
Yeah.
And it's worth noting that then they discover the dragon egg and then he goes, oh, now I get it. He really couldn't have done anything different.
Which, like, has parallels, I think, with, like, the final confrontation, so we should talk about that later. But where I was going with that was the, like, that's when he's rude. He's like, You have led your men into battle when you shouldn't have, and you've cost them their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and now I'm going to be rude to you. Or, like, you're mean to your dragon, so now I'm going to be rude to you, you know?
Another thing I really liked about his character was when he meets the female dragon captains. Mm. And so in the Navy, there are no women. And he just assumes it's the same. And basically, the most ferocious and dangerous of dragons only have female riders. So they have to have, like, female officers. And yeah. I can't remember the phrase exactly, but it's kind of like he sort of mentally checks himself. And he says yeah. that you can read that. You're reading his thoughts of where he's going, oh, why did I assume there could be no women? That was silly. Like, it, yeah. it, you know, oh, that's my preconceived notion.
There are multiple moments of that in the book where he goes, like, for example, so the person in charge of Loch Lagan, the magical dragon Hogwarts, is a dragon.
Yeah.
And he's really shocked. And he's like, he covers it. Like, I think it, I think it's pretty clear that he handles it pretty well. And I think he's, by his own lights, he's as respectful to a superior officer as he would be to a human superior officer. But then he mentions to Temrair that their training master is going to be a dragon. And Temrair is just like, well, of course, why not? Like, Temrair, it doesn't even register for Temrair. And
well,
Temrair, like,
hasn't been spending his life in a society, or so far, in a society that puts about the idea that dragons are just dumb beasts that people use to do.
Yeah.
Do fighting with, or like, you know, and then Lawrence has had this sort of belief completely challenged by the fact that Temrair is obviously massively intelligent, probably more
like
intelligent
smarter
than
him. Let's be honest. There are multiple moments where he's like, "Why is my dragon so into maths? I can't keep up with how into maths he is." He's explaining the Principia Mathematica to me.
Yeah. I do love that. He just goes, "I'm going to go learn Latin so I can explain it to him better," and then. When he goes shopping in Edinburgh to go and get some jewels, he also just buys all of these books to read to him, even though he hates it.
Yeah.
He'll read it to his dragon because he loves the dragon, because he's the best. Just, oh, the best.
But yeah, he's having this like moment of like shock. And then he's like, oh, of course, like, why? He's ashamed of himself to realise that, like, he's gone, oh, of course, Temeraire is a person. And like the language he's used up until that point is like very much like, he's committed to Temeraire. Temeraire is the most important person in his life. Temeraire is an equal partner. Lawrence can never marry because he would never be able to give another person...
enough of himself.
The right, like, as much commitment as he ought because he's already committed to Temeraire, which is just f***ing amazing.
And he's had Temeraire, like, 2 weeks at this point.
Yeah.
Temeraire's a baby at this point.
Yeah. But yeah, he's like, and he's like, oh, I managed to understand that Temeraire is a person. And yet somehow it did not occur to me to extend that to every other dragon on Earth.
Yeah. And not only that, is it's kind of funny that Temeraire is growing up. And so he gets like frills and lots of like as he grows older. And they still can't quite work out what his quote unquote special skill is. You know, some you know, dragons breathe fire or acid. And
I mean, not every dragon has one, so it is plausible that Temeraire might not just have one.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what we believe through most of the book.
Yeah, they thought he was an imperial dragon, which is like one of... Am I correct in that? Was it imperial dragon?
Yeah, they identified him as an imperial dragon at the beginning of the book, which is one of the two Chinese breeds, or one of two Chinese breeds that are incredibly rare, incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
And that explains why the French ship was willing to fight so hard to keep hold of this egg. Mm-hmm.
And it's why it's so important to the Air Corps, because they end up having to do lots of training and I loved reading about like their training formations and how Temeraire, the one where they have to do, like, basically they're doing laps and it's how long until they get exhausted, and Temeraire just keeps going and going and going and going and going and going and just like, oh, I can do another one, I'm not really tired, I'll just do another one, it'd be fine, I'll just do another lap. And all the other dragons
and, like,
are like
Lawrence
long
going,
gone.
Is this not normal? I assumed all dragons could do that and everybody else is losing their goddamn minds. And Lawrence is just like, your dragon can't just hover in midair for no reason? Weird.
Yeah. Also the swimming, like, he's like, oh, he's going for a swim, and they're like, I'm sorry, you're doing a year what now? And then Temeraire goes for a swim, and then all the other dragons like, they're like, I want to go for a swim too.
Yeah, they all try baths.
Oh, it's so adorable, they all go for bath.
Yeah, there were, I think this has brought up for me something I wanted to talk about, which is the kind of the way in which Temeraire and Lawrence are like bringing outsider perspectives to things, because and how well
Lawrence
handled and
man.
Like nuanced that is in this book, because like Lawrence coming from the Navy is having to reevaluate a lot of his like I mean, I think he would argue he doesn't have prejudices and he would treat any man of the aerial corps as he would a member of the fellow armed forces and blah. And I'm not sure that's necessarily
true.
Well,
he does have massive, massive hesitation about becoming one at the beginning in a way that is very much like, oh, I don't want to be one of them.
It's very much like I wouldn't slag them off to their face, and I would be devastatingly rude to somebody who was like, I wouldn't stand for other people being rude about them to my face, but I don't want to become them. It's a miserable life. And I think anybody who's belonged to a marginalized group can kind of relate to that a little bit of the like people being like, oh well, you're fine, but like imagine if I was one of you, sort
it's
of
worth pointing out as well that by the end of the book he is so much happier, so much more secure in himself. He has this incredible relationship with the dragon, with Temeraire, and so at the beginning he's just like, oh, I wouldn't, you know, I can't imagine it. It's a miserable life, and for him it is the life that he needs. Which is really lovely. The other thing about bringing an outsider perspective, we do see a couple times throughout the book where his naval experiences is useful to the aerial corps, or the fact that he's still in touch with his crewmates on board his former crewmates on the Alliant, and he gets news from them. And so it's like we are sort of the sum of all of our history, and it just because he has now become an aviator doesn't mean that he isn't also still a naval captain in some part of his mind.
And it's a two-way street, isn't it? It's
I dare say he can use those skills. It's like, you know, when you have transferable skills on a CV.
Yeah,
I was a naval captain, now I can be a dragon rider. Like, I've got this.
Another really interesting part is later on in the book, he has the chance to go back with some, after he's done a couple aerial battles.
Oh, yes.
He has the chance to go on back onto a ship to someone that he knew and fought with years ago with another couple of dragon captains. And the social norms between the two groups are so different, and now he's on the other side of them, and he can see that the dragon captains are just trying to make conversation and, you know, talk about random things, and that the Navy people are finding it incredibly rude for what Lawrence now perceives to be banal reasons. And the fact that this character has gone from being so firmly on one side of this divide to being completely on the other is really interesting and really well done.
Do you guys want to talk about that sort of, I say, the setup to that battle and that battle? Because I guess one of the things I guess that sort of upset me, I'll say upset me, was the mole who joined their group. And originally it was really nice. And then
that made me sad. It was well done, but it made me sad.
Yeah, it was well done. But also because I feel at that point Captain Roland comes in, who I love. And we find out that, like, this child that basically Lawrence has adopted onto one of Temeraire's sort of crew. Yeah. And it's,
I mean, it's Lawrence like is a good example of the Batman thing of, I am not a father figure, he says, as he trails his many, many adopted children behind him wherever he goes.
Yeah, like, he's kind of going, I will take all of you onto Temeraire. It's great. They got space. It's a big dragon. And then one of them's a girl, and he's like, okay, yeah, you can come too. And it turns out that this girl's mother is a really high-ranking rider of, what was the dragon called?
Ixidium.
There we go, that's one. And you also find out why they don't like evil guy.
Rankin.
There we go, that's the word, sorry, my brain's like, why they don't like Rankin is because Rankin had this, did he inherit the dragon?
Yeah, he inherited Caleritas, who is the master at arms at this training base.
Yeah.
Who is this incredible, like, old, wise, powerful dragon.
Yeah. And it's kind of, because I guess before that point, Lawrence had never really thought, oh, dragons outlive humans. What happens when the human dies? Who takes the dragon?
Oh, God, and he and Roland have that conversation where she's like, oh, well, you'll be wanting to get some strapping young aerial lass pregnant at some point. The Corps will be wanting to breed you too. And he's just like, holy shit, what?
He's like, WTF is happening right now.
He completely loses it. It's so funny.
She says to him, we breed ourselves just as much as we breed them.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
dragons will take much better to a new captain once the old one dies if that new captain is a child of the old one.
And it specifically mentioned sharing their grief, which I really like.
Yeah, and it's kind of, it also kind of reminds, like, just because you're blood doesn't mean you're a good doesn't mean that you're up to the same task. You know, nepotism doesn't work.
So Rankin is like the son of a posh family and he's been slated to inherit this dragon, Caleritas. And Caleritas says something and we never really find out what actually happened between the two. But after I couldn't bear him anymore.
Yeah.
Because Rankin basically treats his dragon like a dumb animal and he abuses him straight up, like neglects him.
It's very like, oh, it's tough love. You've got to like... It's spare the rod, beat the child, kind of.
He needs to be able to be neglected because he might be neglected during war. You know, he needs to be used to harsh conditions because that's what he's for. And everybody hates him for this. And as soon as Lawrence figures out that this is who this guy is, he hates him too.
Yeah.
But there's this whole sort of, I guess, critique of the idea that dragon, like, or that breeding and class mean you're going to be a good person. Because towards the end of the book, there's a situation where... So when a dragon egg hatches, you need somebody there ASAP to put the harness on it because there is a very, very, very short window which a dragonette will let you harness it. And so Caleritas is saying, well, we've got a dragon down about an hour away or so that's about to hatch. And like now that, spoiler alert, Levitas dies and it's really, really, really sad and Rankin has to be strong-armed into going to like actually say goodbye to him as he dies... Like, literally picked out of the bar. Anyway, and Caleritas is like, well, now Rankin doesn't have a dragon, and I don't have an excuse not to let him be the one to go and be the one to harness this dragon that's about to hatch. What the hell are we going to do? Lawrence is like, a dragon, but we're better off dead than in his hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he then recommends the one of the people who is Temuera's ground crew, somebody who hasn't, like, who doesn't, isn't like in he's not highborn or anything.
Yeah, they are, like, I think Lenten asks him if he's a gentleman. And Lauren says, not unless you mean he's a good person.
Basically, yeah, not unless you mean he is a man of
honour and like compassion and
And he basically says, you should take this, you should get this guy. He should have a dragon.
And Holland was the guy who was looking after Levitas. When he said, like, Levitas needs some friendly like company, Holland was the one to go and do it. And
Well, not only that, but tensions between Lawrence and Rankin means that every single person who cares for Levitas without Rankin's approval, which is anyone because he doesn't care about Levitas, is at severe risk of starting an incident between the two. Yeah. Like, Rankin basically bans anyone from giving a shit about Levitas.
And Lawrence was kind of high up enough.
He had to be officially told to stop.
Yeah.
And so they keep doing it anyway, but under pain of severe consequences to care for this dragon.
Because he came in as a captain. Like, he didn't go up the ranks. They basically like, gave his the same rank across, effectively, from the Navy to the Air Corps. He's not like an underling, you know, one of the ground crew trying to care for this dragon. He's like, okay, well, if like you say, if I do it, it might make someone else do it because I've got more to lose if I go against the grain and try and help this tiny dragon, which is...
Yeah, I think we should talk about the, like, the whole sort of... I mean, it's outside of perspective again, isn't it? But I think it's one of the things I really appreciated about this book is how nuanced it is and how many levels that outside of perspective is happening on. Because some of the things that Lawrence brings into the aerial corps from the Navy are good, right? Like, he introduces them to, like, the idea that maybe you should clean your dragon after they eat and it's no excuse not to, like... take the harness off them so they can sleep more comfortably just because it's more work for you and that kind of thing. So there's like some shaking up that he's doing there. But at the same time, like, there are a bunch of moments where he hates to admit it, but like he's very grateful that in the aerial corps it's not standard practice to beat people when they f*** up.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just like, Lawrence, maybe consider that the Navy was f***ed, actually.
Well, and you see that when he has that thing I mentioned earlier where he goes back to being on a boat and it's just like, this is awful, actually.
And it's kind of, that's the boat where they're talking about the, basically there's a big invasion or there's going to be a big invasion into the south of England and they get information about this. And then he goes to the boat and has this discussion around this dinner table and he realises if he doesn't start a conversation that they're not going to talk to each other because, he can see the Air Corps people are trying. He's got used to their manner of speaking. But then he can also see it from the perspective of the Navy and they're like, why is this person talking to me? And they've got a ruffled shirt and they're not tidy and they're not in uniform and blah, blah, blah.
Well, it's
blah,
not
blah.
That. There is a specific rule that if you are invited to dine with the captain, the captain has the right of conversation, I think is how they put it. And so, you're not allowed to have a conversation unless he started it.
Right.
But like, unless you were an officer in the Navy, you never would have known. Like, the Aerial Corps aren't doing it to be rude. It just makes no sense to them that you'd, like, why would they know that rule? But all of these other captains are like looking down on them for trying to be friendly because they don't know this one bullshit rule that, like, you know,
it reminds me of that scene in Pride and Prejudice at Catherine de Bourgh's dinner table. And with Lizzie Bennett, it's not because she doesn't know, it's because she doesn't care. But where Catherine de Bourgh is just asking all these rude questions and Lizzie's just being rude back.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, you know, the done thing would have been to let her be steamrolled. But like, you know, that's stupid and let's not do that, actually.
Yeah. And Lawrence actually is like, maybe I will just hold this whole conversation up with Chenery and nobody can stop me. I think one of the things I like about that scene is that it ends with, like, one of the captains, the naval captains, coming up to him and being like, well, I suppose it's good that we have the Beast looking at Temeraire, but, like, it's a damn shame to, like, lose you in such a fashion.
Damn shame you have to be chained to such a life.
And Lawrence is like, how dare you?
Yeah.
Yeah. He basically implies that Lawrence's life is miserable now. And Lawrence is just like, actually, no.
No, I have this giant dragon.
Like, I think that's maybe the rudest we ever see him. He's just like...
Well, he says... He like, goes off on him. He says, I can't imagine how you thought such an address would be appropriate or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He, like, he proper goes off on him.
Yeah.
And it's just... It's sort of those tiny little mentions of he reads the book to Temeraire and he gives him, like, comfort and cleans him and, like, looks after him.
Yeah.
But as a partner... And everyone else is looking at him going, why are you doing that? Should we be
but
doing
not
that?
The people in, like, the Aerial Corps. The Aerial Corps totally understand.
Yeah. And
I do enjoy how they all react to it as well. They're all like, oh, Lawrence, now you've given them standards. But they do it. They're like, oh, my dragon has asked me to, like, clean them. So I will. Like, now that they know it's a thing that they want, I'm going to do it.
They sort of jokingly complain about Lawrence putting ideas into their heads. And it's just like, yeah, but it makes my dragon happy, so I'll do it.
One thing I do love is how Temeraire always asks for Lawrence's war battles, and then when he finally is in battle, it's very short, and he's like, oh, was that it?
Well, okay, can we talk about the final battle? Because the final battle has one of the coolest concepts. I did not see this coming. I knew there was something. So, like, throughout the book, we hear that Napoleon is up to something, and nobody can tell what, because nobody can get over, like, the lines to see what he's doing. He's doing something inland that requires a lot of dragons, and nobody knows what it is. And it turns out that what he's doing is building airships that dragons can carry over the channel so that he does not have to win a naval battle to get his troops across the channel into England. He can have them in giant, very light boats, essentially, that the dragons will carry. And that's such a cool plan. And it's just this whole thing of, like, how is he going to mobilize all of these dragons that he has? Like, what can he possibly be thinking of doing? Well, he can't come across the channel because we're wrecking his navy. And it's like, no, these two things are related.
I did not pick up on this the first few times I read it, and it was something that, like, really struck me this time. So, you know, we were talking earlier about the incident at the beginning where Lawrence is, like, he's deducing all this shit about the captain of the French ship that they take the egg from. Mm-hmm. He's all like, well, he has no reason to have made this really stupid decision that I can't respect, because he's obviously, like, a sensible captain of many years and all of this other evidence. You know, it makes no sense. And instead of going, maybe there is another reason. There is something that I'm missing that means that this was a rational choice in this guy's mind.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, well, it's a... this is not explicit, but I assume it's a little... It's a kind of a subconscious British superiority complex thing going on. Where he's like, oh, it's just the French being like, I won't inquire further into this mystery, right? He's just like, oh, maybe the French are just stupid sometimes.
He just kind of takes it at face value.
Yeah. And what really gets me is that the entire final battle is set up in the exact same way. So we've mentioned before that there was a traitor. There's a spy in their midst. And he lets on when they catch him that Napoleon is genuinely up to something. And he's very interested in the Dover covert where they are stationed. You know, the first place that you would attack if you were invading, right? They know he's up to something. They know that he's busy with a bunch of dragons on the other side, right? They hear the news about Trafalgar and how England has won at Trafalgar. And they're like, oh yeah, Napoleon's such an idiot. He's like, he just doesn't understand how the Navy works. The British Navy's the best ever, blah, blah, blah,
blah. And it was a diversion.
Yeah.
To draw out their dragons.
Thing is, so, like, they've said repeatedly that they know that Napoleon is smart, right? So they know Napoleon is smart. They know he's up to something. They have the evidence of their own spies to be like, something is going on the other side of the channel, exactly where we'd expect it to if they were planning an invasion. Mm-hmm. And the clincher, somebody says, it's weird that he didn't have that many dragons at Trafalgar. Like, we would have been in real trouble if there had been more dragons at Trafalgar. I wonder where all his dragons are. And instead of going, a smart man is up to something with all of his dragons, they're like, oh, well.
It's up to something hinky.
What a mystery. Guess we'll never know. Time to get drunk. And it's like,
yeah, I'm sure this won't come back to bite us later.
My dudes, did you learn nothing?
Yeah. And I do love how, like, this huge, like, in actual history, this huge historic, like, naval battle.
Yeah. Completely overshadowed by the dragons.
Overshadowed by the dragons. Like, it's a diversion. Trafalgar's a diversion. That big thing in London, the big pillar, it's a diversion, you know? We don't care about that. And they have this big battle, and Temeraire has this thing called a divine wind, which I have just decided is a shockwave.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
It's like he has a shockwave, which makes me very happy.
And it's, like, mad powerful. It, like, wrecks these flying boat things.
Yeah.
Because they're not very sturdy. They're only supposed to, like, survive across the channel, yeah.
Yeah. He single-handedly turns the tides of this invasion.
What I also love, putting my STEM hat on, if the shockwave is travelling faster than the speed of sound, then, like, surely the relative velocity, he's probably also going at least transonic. So, you know, he's also a transonic dragon, which is very exciting.
So him having this divine wind ability means that the only dragons that have this are the Celestials, which is the other Chinese breed. And Celestials are super rare, super valuable. Only the Emperor and, like, close relatives of the Emperor of China are allowed to own them. And so the fact that... So I don't think it's actually in Temeraire. I think it's in the first chapter of the next book, Throne of Jade, which is included in the back of the hard copy of Temeraire that I have. So obviously I read this, and it's basically stated in that the Chinese, for whatever reason, were sending over this dragon egg, this celestial egg, to be the personal dragon of Napoleon Bonaparte, the emperor of France, and obviously then it was intercepted. And Temeraire became Lawrence's dragon. But, like, it's a really, really big deal that Temeraire is the most, like, Mary Sue dragon, most important, most special dragon in the world, basically.
I tell you what it is that Lawrence is a horse girl.
Yes.
We've walked into the wrong genre. Lawrence is a horse girl. Well, this is what I'm getting
genre,
from
right? The reveal that Temeraire is a celestial felt completely in keeping with, like, the shape of the narrative. It's like, it's not that it's, like, predictable, because there are twists. I actually didn't see the choice of the French traitor thing coming.
No, I didn't either.
But overall, it feels completely correct that Temeraire is the most special little dragon boy in the whole world.
Yeah. And he's won the Grand National and he's defeated Napoleon.
Exactly. It doesn't feel trite or overplayed or anything. It's just like, of course, he is the most special little boy.
The best bit I felt at the ending of this bit, because just before they have this big battle, Lawrence is trying to explain to Temeraire, like, why people would go to the town. And he's like, oh, can I go?
He has to explain sex workers to his 10-ton dragon.
And he's like, no, they're going to go and see sex workers. And then the second thing, he's like, oh, and they go and listen to music. And Tamara's like, oh, I love to listen to music.
Oh, that is the most adorable thing
at the end, basically, they're very held in high regard. There's this big party thrown for the aviators and all the dragons are outside. And basically there's this music going on and all the people in the orchestra, either it's by the aviators' request. So they basically put the musicians by the edge of the pavilion to entertain both the humans and the dragons. But then
all the dragons are just like chin hands watching the musicians and just like loving it.
And they realise, so the dragons love this. And they were like having requests and realised that,
at one point, like, the first violinist of the orchestra has just walked off to teach the dragons about music.
Yeah, and like playing all different airs and stuff from different composers and talking about them.
As the evening wore on and the dragons proved a more appreciative audience than the noisy crowd of society, their fear was gradually overcome by their vanity. I'm just like, oh, that's such a sweet ending that they were... I loved that, so happy. And
like, at that same ball that's being, like, held in the aviator's honour, you do see Lawrence reconnect with some of the people who were so awful to him at the beginning of the book when he stopped by his parents' house and were so snobby and, like, oh, your life is over now because you're an aviator. And then the next time he sees them, he's like the hero of the hour, having been the captain of the dragon that single-handedly stopped the invasion.
Yeah.
And it's not this sort of triumphant, ha-ha, and then they were all falling over themselves to, you know, impress me or whatever. Mm. But it does. It is a really nice illustration of the fact that he does not value these people at all anymore, and he is happy where he is, and he goes back to his aviator pals and is just like, oh, thank God I don't have to deal with them anymore.
Yeah. And then eventually goes back to Temra and is just like, instead of going to sleep with his girlfriend, he's like, Temra, can I just stay with you tonight? She'll understand. She's a dragon captain too. And they just hang out. And I love that.
I love it.
I mean, I say that about the cat, you know. I'm just like, I'm just going to hang out with Gothmog tonight, you know? Just going to hang out, have some quality time with my best girl.
I mean, segueing into Gothmog's review, what do you think she would give it? I think she'd very highly, because she is a little dragon.
I think a 10. I'm going to argue for a 10.
I have been plumping for a 10 for this for ages, because there are so... This is the first actual cat we've had. I will die on the hill that Temeraire is the first actual cat in a book that we've read for this podcast.
I think that was my first message to you yesterday. I was like, oh, I love Temeraire. He's just a big cat who wants to breathe fire.
I mean, I think my first note, that literally my first note of my of my notes as I'm reading it is, dragon is like a cat, so.
Yeah. Well, there's a moment, isn't that really early, where he like falls out of the hammock and then pretends he hasn't? Yeah. And that is the most cat thing I've ever seen in my life.
It reminds me of in How to Train Your Dragon, they modelled Toothless's movements off a cat.
Yes.
Which, given that we have a black cat, you really see that sometimes in her movements.
Yeah. I
would argue for a 10 in this book. There's crime, there's daring, there's clambering around, there's lots of dragons eating animals, which I feel
lots
like she
violence,
would appreciate.
Lots of violence, lots of stabbing, lots of guts.
Mm-hmm. There's betrayal, you know. And there's people making big fusses of their overgrown cat friends and buying them lots of shiny things for them to have and own and hoard.
I mean, my personal rating would also be like 15 out of 10. I love this.
It's so good.
It's so good.
So I read this yesterday morning and I had to be like, well, no, I need to stop. I need to stop and like marinate in this for a little bit and record the podcast before moving on to the other books in this series, because
I got them on Kindle, right? Uh-huh. And the first one was like 99p and the second one was like 199 or something. I basically got, like, in the space of 2 weeks, I got to like halfway through book 5 without really stopping to breathe, because I was just like, I was having such a good time. I was just like, nobody's going to stop this party. I'm just going to keep going until I get to the end. It's fine.
Absolutely. That's what I plan to do. I might reread Temeraire first, though.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And I can confirm it bears rereading.
Yeah. I was going to say, what else have you been reading apart from Temeraire on loop perpetually?
I'm still on Marie Kondo as well. And I'm going to get back into reading that End Times book that I mentioned like 10 episodes ago on this podcast about the various ways that the world could end, because that's kind of the headspace I'm in right now. Fun times. But probably I'm about to, finish this series.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing.
It's really good.
How about you, Em?
Oh, I just finished Clouds of Witness, which is the second Lord Peter Wimsey mystery, which I actually did because I started listening to As My Whimsy Takes Me, which is a whimsy-based literary podcast.
Excellent.
Hi, guys. And I really enjoyed it. It's always a good time. A whimsy is always a good time. And I just started The Care and Feeding of Waspish Widows by Olivia Waite, which is like, it's not the sequel, but it features characters from A Lady's Guide to Celestial Mechanics, which is a historical romance, historical lesbian romance, well, Woolawoo romance, featuring lady astronomers and artists and just lots of women being badass and queer. So I'm very excited to read this next one, get more of that. But yeah, that's me.
How about Lottie?
I finished Rhythm of War. I read it in about... this book is over 1,000 pages long and I read it in about 2 weeks. 2.5 weeks.
Excellent.
And thankfully it got delivered to me just before lockdown number infinity, and I just sat down and had to read it because my sibling was like, you gotta read it so we can talk about it. And I finally finished it and it was amazing, and it makes me excited for like some like long-term podcasting that's like, hopefully we read Way of Kings and eventually get to it, because there's just it made me so happy. But yeah, it's a heck of a read, and I probably need to reread it again and again and again just to get all the nuance, but yeah.
Speaking of long-term podcast plans, next week we will be reading The Hobbit And on that episode, we will be joined by Rowan, our audio editor,
woo,
for their first speaking appearance on this podcast.
Woo!
Which is very exciting. And I'm really looking forward to that because I love Tolkien and I can talk about it for hours. So
I've
it's great that we're going to be doing that.
Many questions because I watched the films the other day and I was like, I've literally asked the questions.
Oh boy. Should we divide them up? Because, dear listeners, this is going to be a two-parter because we just know that we are that much of nerds about The Hobbit that we're going to need two full episodes.
Oh, absolutely.
May I respectfully suggest we reserve one episode for yelling about the adaptation? And
yeah,
one
we'll
that is adaptation-free
we'll
as much as possible.
Yes, definitely, yeah. Definitely. But yeah, thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode. Please like, subscribe, and if you are able to give us a review on your podcast platform, Apple Podcasts or Podcast Addict, please do. You can add us on all our social media pages. They're linked in the description box below, and they're also all on our website. And if you want to send us an email, recommend us some books, teachingmycattoread@gmail.com. Add hello there in the subject so we know you're not spam. So yeah, say hello, big virtual hugs, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. So we're recording this a little bit later because we realised that we did not say all of the things that we wanted to say about this awesome book. And we're actually going to do another episode on it. So look out for Temeraire 2, The Temeraireening. next time when we talk about all the things that we wanted to talk about this episode and may even have mentioned in this episode and then didn't get around to talking about properly. And we're really excited to record that because, in case we didn't say it enough this episode, this book is awesome.
Yeah, we loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. Other than that, we'd like to say thank you very much for listening and it's goodbye from us.
Bye.
Bye.